Oh, whoa. Wow. Oh, sorry. Didn't see you there. Okay, here's the deal, guys. You know how distracting this is. You know how addictive it is. You know that it's making you and a lot of people around you less connected and less happy. But you probably don't know just how bad the crisis is. And even if you did, you don't know how to get out of it. We're going to change that today with a profound conversation with my friend Andy Laubacher today on The Chris Stefanik Show.
You have 334 months of free time. Right now, 93% of that free time is going to be spent on the screen, which is going to be 27 years of your life of this. But what's crazy is 68% of Gen Zers feel like, quote, I feel lonely and that no one gets me. Mm. One out of five millennials have zero friends.
One in five had no friends.
Zero friends. I deleted all my social media. I went back to flip phone T9 texting. It was brutal. I one of the first things I felt was my attention span come back.
Welcome to the Chris Stefanik Show. We are here every week to give you the tools and inspiration you need to live your everyday life with joy, even when life gets crazy. If you want daily inspiration, click below this video, sign up for the Daily Anchor. It's free, no strings attached. We just want to bless you. I want to thank our missionaries of joy who are blessing the world through this show and through everything that we're doing to preach the gospel, to serve the poor. Guys, you're changing lives. Thanks for being with us. And I want to thank EWTN. This episode is sponsored in part by EWTN. You can catch this and so much more on EWTN Plus streaming. Link is below in the show notes. Today, guys, really excited to have the man who's working full-time for Humanality to help people be freed of their tech addictions, my friend Andy Laubacher. It's going to change your life. I'm so glad you're here. I love
good
you.
Good to be here, brother.
Good to see you.
Love you too, man.
Yeah, and I'm really proud of you. Like you're seriously embodying what you're preaching.
I'm trying.
You've wandered into the wilderness.
Quite literally, yes.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna circle back there because I want to know your whole the whole journey and what mm-hmm. life is like on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know I can't go to the other side like you have.
For sure.
But there's ways in which I can't.
Totally.
But let's dive into the crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Average human attention span, I've read, used to be 12 seconds. Now it's 8 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds. So we've literally transformed our brain's hardwiring
mm-hmm.
and decreased our function and our functionality as humans.
Yep.
What's happened to the brain? Like, why has that happened?
Yeah, so you're
I could feel it in myself.
For sure. Yeah. No, and I felt all these things. I was addicted to a lot of these platforms and my smartphone and a lot of these things. But your average American is just looking at the device 352 times a day. That's about every 2 minutes and 45 seconds, up to about 2,000 times a day for young people. We're talking like just, notifications in the thousands for some people. Average teenagers texting about 167 texts per day. The text, tweet, emails, our brains are being stimulated in a way that they've never experienced before. And so a lot of this is actually creating what's called this brain drain. So there's multiple studies that have shown this. A 2017 study showed researchers just literally put the phone in the presence of people taking cognitive tests, and their fluid intelligence actually decreased just with the mere presence of the device.
You're kidding me.
So their performance on their test, literally just as the phone got closer to the person, like in the room, or it was in the room in a backpack, or out of the room, the people that were furthest removed from the device did the best on the test. So simply because there's so much novelty packed in that
My mouth's agape just by the nearness of the phone.
Just the nearness of the phone.
Sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, the novelty, right? Of constantly finding something new. I mean, there's infinite knowledge now, right, in our devices. Just that is draining our brain's capacity. Nicholas Carr, in his book, The Shallows, talks about this. In 1960, we were already exceeding the amounts of information that we could handle in a day. So just imagine what we're experiencing a day, like today. So there's some real physiological impacts. So that's what's different. I think people think with technology, since it's not this substance I'm putting in my mouth, that it's not addictive.
Mm.
But the data is showing completely a different reality, that it is totally addictive. Behavioral addictions are now, since 2013, in the DSM. And that's gambling, and I think social media there will be in there soon. So there's a reason why, you know, Dr. Vivek Murthy, I think last year, the Surgeon General of the U.S. asked for warning labels on our social media platforms, just like they did for cigarettes.
Wow.
It's because that it is having real cognitive, spiritual, physical, and social impacts on our well-being. And the more I started to dive into the data, it gets really intense.
Are you feeling your attention span literally increase the more you distance yourself? 100%.
So when I went back to a flip phone, 2018.
Wow.
I deleted all my social media. I went back to flip phone, T9 texting. It was brutal. I one of the first things I felt was my attention span come back.
It just bounced back.
It bounced back. Within 2 weeks, I could feel like, I could actually concentrate a little bit better. Because I'm ADHD to the max, you know. So these technologies like really preyed upon me. And we'll get into why later.
Yeah.
But I noticed immediately my concentration improved. Because there's really nothing I could do on my flip phone, right? It was calling and texting. Outside of that, any other stimulation wasn't affecting me. And we actually know now that from fMRI scans of the brain, some 2012 studies on gamers.
Yeah.
This is wild.
No, yeah.
So this study was actually done in 1998 and actually showed, like, 1998 video games are very different than Fortnite today, right?
Oh, yeah.
In 1998, these studies that were done on gamers showed that actually there was a 100% dopaminergic increase in the brain. So sex is also a 100% dopaminergic experience in the brain. So 1998 games were releasing the same amount of dopamine as sex did.
Oh my
gosh. So as you get higher, right, meth, you know, these other drugs are in the 300 to 3,000% increase. But the real levels of dopamine that are being released with our scrolling, with our games, it's a completely different drug. And it is having real impacts on our cognition, on being human. And that's really interested in is helping people be human.
Be more human again.
Yeah.
There's causality between phone use, especially social media, and depression.
Yep.
Right? 2016, first year Gen Z entered college. And I think they should be renamed iGen. There's a great book on this called iGen.
Yep, Gene Twenge. Right?
Phenomenal book. Look it up. Gene Twenge, iGen.
Mm-hmm.
But that year, over half of them self-reported as feeling below average in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I see a relation between the loss of faith and that. But
that's good.
Right? But there's also, I mean, part of the reason for the loss of faith is that when I was a kid, if you had fundamental angst about why do I exist, you had to literally sit there and think about it. And you just don't have to anymore. You could medicate and distract yourself with a dopamine hit that's the equivalent of intercourse. That blows my mind.
It's the greatest escape of all time, and that's what a lot of the data is showing, is that our devices, our media, our gaming, Candy Crush, even our, you know, texting, and I remember doing this all the time when I feel lonely, just blast out, like, 50 texts to people just to
100%,
start some conversations.
Yeah.
And, like, it's an incredible, actually, numbing. It has an incredible numbing capacity to actually, like, numb psychological distress. But it's interesting, you quoted, there's plenty of studies
the depression factors. Yeah,
right. There's plenty of studies that are showing causal links between a real dose-dependent effect, meaning the more time that you spend scrolling, the more likely you are to experience depression or anxiety. It's actually 2x.
Why? What is happening? Two times more likely.
So over 3 hours, it's 2x. And your average teenager day is 5.5 hours of social media a day.
Jeez.
So I think there's a lot at play of why it's depressive. I can maybe share a little bit of why it depressed me.
100%, please.
So I'm a millennial, right?
Yeah.
And I'm in my resurrection year, you know. I'm 34.
Nice.
Survived my Jesus year. It was a tough one. It's a very crucifying year.
Yeah.
But I got MySpace in high school, and even as early as MySpace, I could tell you multiple ways that internet experience was already starting to play on our social psychology. So I don't know, did you ever have MySpace?
That was the first thing. Okay. Back when I had an AOL.
Yeah, I had AOL instant messaging.
And MySpace.
That was like when I started spitting game in eighth grade with girls online, you know, and it was stupid.
Yep,
and it was like, hey, let's go meet at recess, you know,
yeah,
it was like stupid.
Andy,
like, do you
want to
be my girlfriend? You know, it was like that first kind of like weird social media like thing happening.
Uh-huh. And the dial-up sound.
For sure.
Yeah, you kids haven't, you don't remember.
Yeah,
don't
it wasn't
remember
that sound, but it was something like that. But I remember you in MySpace, like your top eight. Like I remember like my best friend was like my number one. And if something happened or there's some drama and he went down to number three, oh my gosh, dude, it was like drama, you know, drama for a week. And already at that time, I could, you know, it was getting really pornified like very quickly. Like even on MySpace, girls were starting to take pictures of themselves in ways that were like very promiscuous. And MySpace was already pretty detrimental. But for me on Facebook, I'd say, and I was on all of them. So Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. I'd say it was just kind of your basic fundamental idea and reality that everyone's just posting their best day. And my day didn't look as cool. And then what was interesting is when I was starting to travel around the country and around the world and all these big events and posting my day and flight and people I'm meeting, I was kind of doing the same thing. But on the inside, I wasn't actually happy, you know? And so these stories, even on your Instagram stories and your Snapchat, and like, this isn't really your story. This isn't really your life. Most of us are, and I experienced like posting our best moments and best days. And I don't think that's necessarily something completely, you know, on purpose in the sense of like, well, we just, we naturally want to show our best selves. And I just found that after I'd done scrolling, I wasn't really encouraged about life or my situation or what I had. There was no time I could say, and I've actually never heard anyone tell me this, and I'm still waiting for this at some point, but after like 4 hours of scrolling your Instagram feed, you're just like, I love my life. Everything's perfect. I can't wait to get up and start my 3 a.m. workout. You know, it's like, I do, like that's not the experience. It's it really is this social comparison effect that's real. That we just weren't designed for.
We're comparing ourselves to unrealistic self-presentations of people.
Sure.
But again, you experience yourself.
But I did it myself, too. I was posting my best days and all the big concerts and all the things, and I did it, too. And I think part of me, you know, was like, well, this is kind of what I have to do. And then part of me was also like, well, I want people to see what I'm doing, too. I really felt it, you know, really exploiting some of these what I would call seven deadly sins, you know, specifically lust, obviously. Our feeds are just so filled. I mean, I largely got off of social media because it was just leading me to pornography.
Wow.
I mean, it was just every day, every scroll, you know.
It pops right up.
I could see Father Mike Schmitz and Bishop Barron, and then the next scroll was something not good, you know. But that got corrupted over time. But I'd say the depressive symptom is largely that comparative effect.
And it's been... it's been demonstrated. It's been proven.
Right. You know, this isn't actually needing to be debated. It's just like we're all kind of stuck in
it's
it.
It's there.
You know?
Yeah, right. And we know it. I mean, you wouldn't give your kids a food that makes them two times more likely to become depressed if they eat that food. But yet, every morning, I'm okay. If they want it, I mean, they want the food. All their friends are eating the food.
Totally. And it's a good comparison because it is, to me, a lot of these media platforms are just junk food. They're empty calories. They really don't give us the nourishment that we long for, which is real in-person connection, intimacy with God, movement. Obviously, we can get into all the health and wellness effects, but we're incredibly sedentary now. And our technology is largely making us sick just on a physical level, right? Because we're not outside, we're not getting sunlight, we're not getting movement, and we weren't designed to sit. Dr. Cardara says that we weren't designed to be sedentary, screen-staring, meaning-devoid creatures.
That sums it up.
Freaking great line.
Gen Z.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, all of our
generations. But it's all of us.
Right
now. It's all of us. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think sometimes we really focus this in on teens, and I'm like, dude, us adults are just as addicted. Like my dad, 65, 6 years old, totally addicted to Facebook.
Yeah.
You know?
Or you,
so it's
or
not
you switch from Snapchat to Reddit.
Right.
It's just something else. Something else to
and
scroll.
What's hard is like, because I love, like YouTube was kind of my kryptonite once I got rid of everything else. And YouTube, like I have so many friends that have experiences and share, like they needed to fix their dishwasher and they YouTubed it and that saved them like $500.
100%.
Or your Facebook marketplace and you can get all these great things. It's like there's little, you know, moments I'd say where this could be used as a tool and this helpful. But at this point, I know too much of how they're monetizing us, how it's affecting us, and the sociological impacts are so intense that it's hard for me to like invite people to moderate these things when they're not designed to be moderated. So Abigail Schreier says, when we talk about moderation with these technologies, it's like nurses going to high schools asking students to moderate ecstasy. It's the wrong kind of conversation, you know? So the moderation thing for me, I couldn't moderate it. And then I realized, like, oh, they don't want me to moderate it. They want me to be on screen as much as possible to monetize my attention because they're not free apps.
Yeah.
They actually cost us an incredible amount of time. Your average teenager's 8 hours and 39 minutes a day of screen time. Sadly, Hispanic and Black communities, low-income communities, are at 10 hours a day of screen time. If you add this stuff up, right, your average 18-year-old right now is on pace with a 90-year lifespan to spend, if you break down your lives into months, right, 30 of your life is asleep, certain amount of months you're working, certain amount of months you're in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You break down, you have 334 months of free time. Right now, 93% of that free time is going to be spent on the screen, which is going to be 27 years of your life of this. So here's my thing. I think, and I looked at that, I remember looking at my iPhone screen time, seeing like 5.5, 6 hours, sometimes longer, and then kind of doing that math for myself. And I'm like, I just looked at the end, right? I looked at the end of my life. What do most people care about? It's usually not money, actually.
Yeah.
It's usually not really any success metric of today, fame, power, pleasure, money.
Yeah.
It's really relationships and with people.
Yeah.
And these devices, our technologies, just go to an airport, go to a restaurant, go to the beach, look around, like start looking around. Because when you get up and you start to look around, it's really crazy.
There's a world out there.
There's a world out there.
Just it's incredible. There are certain governments that are putting limits on 100%. Teenager use of social media. Why in America are we looking at this thinking like, well, what can we possibly do? Like, no, you actually can do things. You can also limit pornography use. Like we limit a kid's access to a lot of things.
Totally.
Why isn't that translating here? What countries are limiting use? How's that going?
Yeah, Australia and the UK is doing it. Yeah, Florida obviously created some laws that are shutting down certain age groups. So three major things at play here. Again, this big tech, you know, playbook is very similar to Big Tobacco. So Guy Burstein's book, Unwired, kind of displays these three mechanisms that they're using to really keep us addicted and kind of keep this whole thing shut down, because the data's out.
Yeah.
And a lot of what Humanality and a lot of my work is going to be sharing this to empower people to make better decisions with their time and their lives, right? So three major mechanisms at play is science wars, First Amendment, and personal responsibility. So these big tech companies are saying things like, this is your responsibility to moderate these devices, right? And we'll get into why that actually is impossible. First Amendment issues they bring up all the time. The biggest one right now is the science wars. So like Gene Twenge and Jonathan Haidt and Dr. Kardars, there's incredible books with incredible amount of data of the causal links between poor mental health outcomes and exposure to these platforms. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the loneliness crisis we're in, not to mention the chronic disease epidemic we're in. Not to mention in 2016 and 17, we had literally the U.S. life expectancy fell due to deaths of despair. So these are deaths from alcohol, suicide, and other self-harm issues. Every metric you can look at in our well-being is like going down in the U.S., right? From mental health to physical. We're just not, ultimately, I do think we're just not living how God intended us to. But those science wars, I think, are the biggest one that are happening right now. So yeah, you'll see guys like Zuckerberg and them say like, our products, help people connect with the world and like totally disregard everything else. In 2021, Francis Haugen was a whistleblower that came out and actually showed that, Meta, which controls Facebook and WhatsApp and Instagram, showed that they have internal research. This is just what really makes me angry, is that they know their products are harming young girls specifically. So 2021, Francis Haugen's Facebook files come out. Internal documents show that Instagram knows that their algorithms are increasing suicidality and self-harm amongst young girls.
And they know it.
And we're asked, internally, should we do something about it? And they said, no, that would decrease our engagement. So this is happening on TikTok, Instagram. Like, we know these things are exacerbating eating disorders, self-harm, suicidality. And they know this. And so that's why the data's out there. They're trying to confuse the public through this. And kind of one of the crazy things about all of it is that these platforms, like we talked about at the beginning, are literally degrading our capacity neurologically in our brain for what's called spectrum thinking. So being able to think nuanced, it's creating what's called dichotomous thinking, very binary, black and white.
Wow.
If you talk to people.
Why is that? It's because we're not spending time contemplating? Is that it?
I think that's one of the factors.
Exercising the muscle of contemplation.
100%. And I also think it's because of the swipe and the less than 30-second bit of information. And again, our attention spans have now fallen, you know, below the goldfish. So, we're not giving our brains time to experience what's called this default mode network of the brain, which is like boredom and wandering. Steve Jobs, in a 2010 interview, was asked, you know, how are your children loving the new iPad? And he said, we don't give it to them. We limit their technology.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, they don't get high on their own supply. So all of the major big tech founders, Eric Schmidt, Zuckerberg, Bezos, I mean, go down the list. They literally all went, Gates, they all went to Waldorf schools, which are low tech to zero tech schools. Wow. And they don't give these products to their children at all. It's not like they just give it, they don't give it to them at all.
A drug dealer is the perfect analogy, right? Because there's two industries that call you a user, the person selling you meth, the person who designs your app, right? That's it.
It's so true.
Every other, I could think of any industry, it's to serve you in a way that makes your life better so that you come back to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is the industry that you are the thing served. Your attention span, your precious attentiveness is served up to marketing agencies.
Yep.
And they know it. So how does that translate? Like, what are they doing that make them so good at, like, I'm preaching about this.
For
I'm a 49-year-old man. I can't keep my eyes off my phone sometimes.
For sure.
I don't know what to think sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I pick up my phone and ask it what to think. I'm ashamed to say that. Like, I'm just bored for a minute. It's like, what do I think? Someone's going to tell me.
For sure.
Someone who wants to sell me something.
For sure.
What are they doing? They know they're doing it.
Yes.
How are you so good at this?
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, so they're listening to your conversation, too.
Even right now.
My mother the other day was hilarious. Because, I've been educating them on this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
We were talking about cast iron pans, the other day. And the phone's not even in the room. And
it's literally disturbing.
That evening, on her Facebook feed, cast iron pans. The next day, we're talking about saunas. Her whole Instagram feed is saunas. I mean, so the privacy issue is a whole other thing we won't probably be able to get into today, but the privacy issue is really concerning.
That's going to blow up too, I think.
Yes, I hope.
I hope.
Pretty much everything that's possible of your data being sold is happening right now. Literally down to your eyes, looking at the screen on how long your eyeballs stay on a certain feed is being.
They know what you're looking at.
It's being calculated. So let's go back to a little history of why this is so addictive and why it's working so well. So. B.J. Fogg is kind of the guy we want to start with. 1998, Stanford Technology Lab, Persuasive Technology Lab was the name of it. This was called the Facebook class.
Yeah.
So he discovered a few mechanisms from B.F. Skinner in the 50s through these Skinner cages that showed that intermittent positive feedback or variable rewards with rats actually kept them coming back to the drug more. So if you just consistently gave them something, they actually wouldn't take it. But if you gave them something and pause a little bit, wait a little bit, that variability kept them coming back for more and created addiction.
Hey there, I just wanted to share something really important with you guys real quick. You know what's crazy? This entire show, every episode, every conversation, every life changed only happens because of our supporters. The Chris Stefanik Show is powered by people like you, people who believe in spreading the joy of the gospel. Now here's the deal. Each year we reach millions of people, but there are millions more that have not received not just the good, but the great news of the gospel. We want to reach those people, walk with them, and that's where you come in. When you become a monthly donor, a missionary of joy, you're not just donating, you're actually making this mission possible. You're helping us bring the hope, truth, and joy of the gospel to a world that desperately needs it. And that's not all. As a missionary of joy, you get exclusive access to all our video series, including Living Joy, Rise, Renewed, Fearless, and more. You get exclusive early access to new releases. You get Monday motivation texts direct from me. And you get access to our daily anchor, daily inspiration to fuel your faith. The truth is, the gospel is too good to keep to ourselves. If this show or our work has encouraged you, challenged you, or strengthened your faith, imagine how many more lives we can change together. Don't just watch the mission. Fuel it. Click the link below and become a monthly donor today. It'll be the best investment you make this year.
And so a lot of what this new school of psychological thought is called behaviorism, BJ Fogg started teaching at Stanford to his Facebook class, just one example, this intermittent positive feedback idea. And that in 10 weeks, they deployed these tactics in certain apps. In 10 weeks, that class got 16 million users and $1 million in revenue using some of these behaviorism tactics. Simply just one like intermittent positive feedback. The website was called Machines Changing Human Behavior. That was the title of what they discovered. There's an incredible history of literally our knowledge now of how we know how to exploit human behavior, literally manipulate how you think and behave. So that's where social media was born. BJ Fogg at the Stanford Technology Lab. All those...
So intentional psychological manipulation.
Yeah, so Sean Parker, the first president of Facebook, literally said this, I quote, our idea was how can we monetize and consume as much time as possible? It's a social validation feedback loop to get you to like, to comment, and that keeps you coming back for more. It's exactly something like a hacker like myself would create. It's Kevin Systrom on Instagram. It's Eric Schmidt at Google. We did this intentionally, and we knew it anyway. That's a direct quote. Chamath, who was also
one of the... Hacking the
brain. Hacking the brain. Chamath was the first, I think, president for user growth, and he said, I feel tremendous guilt for what we've created. I don't want to be programmed myself. I don't use these platforms, and I don't give them to my children. These are two of the guys that started this. They're telling us that they did this on purpose. So when you're looking even at your phone for texts, right, we're completely overrun. I remember feeling so overrun with my texts in a day.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're like on the road and doing events.
Overrun
and,
is the right word.
Yeah, overwhelmed, overstimulated.
Yeah.
Just the amount of text, emails, calls. There's a reason we are incredibly stressed out. And actually the hyperconnectivity that's happening online is actually increasing loneliness in our lives. We're actually not experiencing deeper relationships. But so two major reasons
why. All the bandwidth is going to the phone.
100%.
I've seen teenagers hang out. Literally, they don't know how to talk. I mean, they're all looking at their phone.
100%. I just heard this the other day from a friend. They're doing this thing now called a phone break.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, that's so cool. They put the phones away and they talk to each other. No. They're all hanging out together at someone's home. They take a phone break where they all get on their phones together and literally spend an hour on their phones checking their feeds, checking their Snap, checking out the TikTok, everything, while they're together. Sherry Turkle has a great book called Alone Together, where she talks about this on a really incredible, she's an MIT professor, just incredible data on, you know, how these comment sections and these Reddit forums, this disembodied experience that we're having is not human. And a few things psychologically that are happening, right? This disinhibition effect, which we all know.
Disinhibition effect, define that.
Yeah, so it's simply the idea that when you're online on a comment section, you know, forum, whatever, you have an increased propensity for anger, hatred, gossip, you name it. And we all know that, right? Like we say things online to people we would never say to their face.
Right.
So that's one thing being just completely exacerbated, but this euphoric recall is a similar mechanism.
Euphoric recall.
So that's the idea that when you scroll, it feels good because you're getting a lot of dopamine, right? And that mesolimbic brain's reward system, it's in the nucleus accumbens. It's this feel-good molecule that we love, right? Chemical.
Yeah.
But when you think back to that time you were scrolling Facebook, you actually remember that dopamine feeling, and you don't remember how bad you felt after. So we're exacerbating, you know, incredible amount of hatred. And again, these algorithms prey on negative emotion. So I don't know if you noticed on YouTube and everything, but everyone's like posts now are like super big facial expressions, a lot of red and black, very expressive anger. And actually, I heard Ben Shapiro say on one of their Daily Wire things, they had like two videos. One of them was like Ben Shapiro destroying a left-wing atheist, you know, and the other one was like Ben Shapiro having a good conversation, you know, with someone.
And zero like, views.
Zero views, yeah, you know, the other one. So there's some pretty major exploitations that are happening.
Wow.
And again, social approval, intermittent positive feedback are your two main mechanisms, which is why we can't stop looking at these things. And again, it's on purpose. Like, this isn't by chance. And convenience is really killing us. So, like, people talk about the convenience of the device, and I don't argue with that. But when we talk about convenience, McDonald's is really convenient.
Right.
If you eat McDonald's every day, the convenience is going to kill you.
Yeah.
I'd say the convenience of communication and the exploiting algorithms that are monetizing and hyper-extremifying everything are making us sick, and like physically, you know? So that's why we can't stop. It's actually not your fault.
You know, it's almost unavoidable. I mean, you evolved to get the most outcome for the least amount of calories burned, right? So I want community with people. I want to be with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the least calories burned is just to go on social media.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, it's a lot of calories, man, to sit down and
totally.
I'm going to have a conversation. It might not even go well. I can't run away from it.
Scary
can't delete
now
you as a friend.
People.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Wow. Cal Newport, Deep Work, talked about how.
Love that guy.
It's a great book. He talked about when you are on a task and then derailed, it takes 20 minutes to get back to the same level of intense focus on the task that you had before you were derailed. And people think, you know, no big deal if I check my text every 10 minutes. Well, you're actually never fully attentive to your children. I'm not just the book you may have written.
100%.
So I know these things, right? You try to put the phone aside.
Yes.
And it has a way of breaking in.
Mm-hmm.
I think a Snapchat. It's like a kid knows there's a social cue sent if a girl has to wait 10 minutes for a response. But Snapchat has built itself to where the girl will see the moment he sees her text. So the clock is ticking immediately.
And that's part of the pain. So this is part of the pleasure-pain relationship. So Anna Lemke talks about this in Dopamine Nation. This is a huge mechanism keeping you glued. And I remember this even texting, you know, texting girls or like dating, even like texting late into the night, seeing that it was read and no response. That pain is actually, again, increasing that anticipatory need to get that dopamine to feel at ease again. So almost all these apps have a pain-pleasure relationship. That's why the likes there. That's why the comments there. So you're either getting that excitement or you're getting that pain, which again actually keeps you coming back for more. Because again, negative emotions reside in the human person longer. So there's a reason why news stations are all the worst things happening in the world, because that's gonna keep you engaged. Mm. That's a great point with the Snapchat and even the location now. I have a lot of young people come up to me and talk to me about this, and they're really open about
it. What is it, the location?
Just their location on Snapchat, I guess.
Yeah.
I haven't been on these things in 7 years, so I'm just like learning.
So they share locations?
So they share locations, so you can see all your friends at one party, and you know that you're not invited. I mean, can you imagine that in high school, dude? I would be a wreck.
Total mess.
I would be a total mess if I knew that all my friends are somewhere and I didn't get invited, and then I'm watching the party on Snapchat, you know?
Yeah.
Snapchat was really detrimental in my life, too.
It's a masterpiece. I mean, even streaks, you know, like if you have a 1,000-day streak, it's a public, I'm going to out Snapchat for the parents watching, right? 1,000-day streak, that's a public proclamation of here's how important the friendship is.
Right.
You miss one day, it's zero. So these kids are like, they're working for Snapchat. If dad says, come and go camping, and they're out of the service area, they're going to have a panic attack because every friendship would be ruined. I tell kids when I speak, I do assemblies and talk about how to be joyful. I'm like, dude, let all your streaks die. And I tell them,
I've been seeing you talk about this. It's honestly super encouraging.
I might get killed, not for saying stop sleeping with your girlfriend. I'll be martyred for that one, though.
That's a great point. But what's crazy is 68% of Gen Zers feel like, quote, I feel lonely and that no one gets me.
Mm.
1 out of 5 millennials have zero friends.
1 in 5 had no friends.
Zero friends. So this whole idea that these are connecting, and yes, you can FaceTime grandma, and that's not a bad thing. But our social capital is actually dying. So Putnam wrote a book called Bowling Alone and showed how all of these, you know, Boy Scouts or like sports or literally bowling leagues, they're all diminishing. Now, this is due to technology, and we're unpacking technology on a bigger scale, right? The car's a technology.
Yeah.
The plane's a technology. Now, those aren't necessarily bad, but even the car, we can see early, you know, in our history, that even the car began to create more separation in our living environments. And a lot of what these studies have shown with Dr. Bruce Alexander in the 1970s, he was a Canadian psychologist. He had these big rat park experiments, which was off of Skinner's work, you know, in the 50s. But he showed that actually it wasn't actually the addictiveness of the drug that was causing these rats to continue to go back for more. It was actually social isolation and a poor environment. So they put this rat park experiment, put rats with food and friends and hamster wheels and sex, and they had everything, and the drug was still in there. Yeah, they had the drug still in there, and rats would go to it and not get addicted to it. So I think what's happening is technology is actually isolating us and creating this negative feedback loop where we're feeling lonely because we're not connected, because we're not getting this in our day-to-day.
Yeah.
And we're getting stuck in these reward center loops, you know?
So what do we do with this information besides despair? And here's where I'm sure you'll tie in humanality and what you're doing now with your life, really. Yep. This is your full-time thing, is helping people get out of this.
Yes.
What do you do? Because I'm not going to be a Luddite, man. Like 100%. I love my GPS.
For sure.
I can't do maps. I'm too ADD.
For sure.
Even with that, it's telling me where to turn. And I'm like having a conversation and it's like, oh, wait. Oh, 3 miles ago. That's totally. Why it's been repeating itself.
Totally.
I love being able to answer emails and get stuff done. Like, that drives me a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I love being able to do ministry through it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you...
It's a great question.
How do you strike the balance without just throwing the thing in the trash? Maybe it's not possible. I don't know. Save me.
Yes.
Help me.
It's definitely... Yeah. This is... I like getting into this because it's first good to understand, and we just scratched the surface of the problem, right? Like, there's so much more happening. Especially in the pornography world, just that is opening up.
Crazy.
30% of all internet traffic is pornography.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, no, we get smartphones in underdeveloped nations and think, we'll revolutionize it. And like it's like, wait, Candy Crush and porn. Like
that's
what they're doing.
Yeah, and the whole idea too, Nicholas Carr.
In rural Uganda now, it's like what?
Totally.
We've not done anything good here.
And Nicholas Carr talks about this in his latest book, Super Bloom, but all these people that were like, the internet is going to be the most unifying thing ever. It's going to create equality amongst social classes.
I mean,
there's so many projections, and it is the complete opposite. It's literally the complete opposite.
Laughable.
It's what's happening. But yeah, so solutions, this is what I'm studying pretty deeply and been experimenting in my own life the last 7 years, so... Again, for me, I had to completely get rid of these devices to heal. So I went to a flip phone, 2018. My friendships got better. My concentration got better. My purity got better. My prayer got better. My music career
got
better.
Did your friendships get less numerous?
Correct. So they went down for sure. But you'll notice really quick who your friends are because they call you.
Wow.
And they really reach out to you. And it got small. Dr. Robert Dunbar is an evolutionary psychologist, I think, and he gave this number of actually how many friends you can actually handle. It's about 150 max.
Friends. That's
friends.
A lot.
Friends. Acquaintances, it goes down to 50. Like kind of you see
Wait,
more
acquaintances
regularly.
150, friends 50.
Yeah, so I guess the definition is like 150 is like your entire group.
All the people you know.
Correct. That you can really sustain relationships with. They're going to be at different levels.
Okay.
So it goes like 150, 50, 15, and 5.
What? So the 150 is the acquaintances that you
yes.
know. 50 would be your friends?
Closer friends.
Closer friends.
15 is like your inner circle.
Okay.
And then 5 is your really close friends.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
150, you know. And if I think about even in my own life, even now, it's about in that realm. Like I have probably 5 really close friends I'm talking to regularly.
Yeah.
The lie with social media is that all these friends following us are our friends. We evolutionarily can't handle more than 150. And they look at like Amish communities and hunter-gatherer tribes. It's crazy. It's in that 150 to 230 realm.
Wow.
So anyway, I had to do these intense detoxes to get my time back and then actually remove myself from most of these platforms. So today, I mean, my life looks very different than it did 7 years ago. I really interact very little with the internet and YouTube and like...
Wow.
Technology in general, which we can get into. But for what your average person can do...
And you do this in a radical way. You live in a cabin in Wyoming.
For sure.
Yeah, like last time I saw you, you did not have a beard. Your hair wasn't long.
I'm trying to live it. Yeah, I mean, at the cabin, there's no cell service, no light pollution.
And you have a tan as if actual sunshine has been on your face.
Yeah. I was trying to go outside.
Unlike most Gen Zers.
Right,
a little bit bluish hue.
Yeah. It's real. It's real. 93% of our time is being spent indoors. Children are spending more time inside than some maximum security prisons. Fun fact.
These are painful
things. I know they're painful.
If I'm pausing, it's because like these are painful
I know they're
things
painful.
To hear.
I know. But we're helping people be human. So Humanality is the organization I'm executive director for. We are running these digital detox villages, is what I call them, actually.
Wow.
Now, where we actually walk people through a whole kind of detox protocol to create an intentionality with technology. So this is why I love you shared that, because I use technology. I use email. I have a light phone. I go on YouTube occasionally and try and watch some stuff. I have to be really careful because I can get totally sucked down the YouTube rabbit hole. I've kind of eliminated most podcasts from my life. I'm trying to read more, but our main mission is to help people use technology with intentionality. I honestly think living with the Amish for a little bit would be kind of dope, but I'm not going to do that myself. And I like the car technology. I don't want to go back to horse and buggy.
Oh, totally.
My planes, I don't necessarily like living in them, but like I like when they work and they get me places really fast.
Right.
I don't want to get rid of it. I love my Instapot, to be honest. Instapot was a game changer for like making my potatoes. Oh my gosh.
That's great.
Great technology.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about getting rid of everything,
right?
Yeah,
100%. Right?
Yeah. So one, because the technologies are degrading our capacity for nuance, it's really hard to talk about this. It's almost like we're all bulimic because with technology, it's like you, if you have an eating disorder, you have to eventually learn to eat.
But you got to evaluate the technology. I've heard about the Amish community that if a new technology comes up, they gather and they discuss whether or not they should use it.
And this is essentially what we're helping people do, and our whole movement walks you through this detox protocol so you can actually use technology intentionally and not be used by it and get your time back and get your health back, because these are all connected, right? You eat about 30% more calories while you're scrolling or watching TV. You know, this stuff is, it's mind-numbing, and then I've done it a million times. Dude, you're eating popcorn, all of a sudden, like, we just had three boxes of popcorn, you know? So we walk students through, and this is how it's worked so far, and we're about to launch this to the general population, so...
I hate to say it. Are you launching this through an app?
There's no app. We have a website.
Okay,
so everyone
good.
Can go to our website.
Yeah, it's intelligently managed.
So, and you know, Carlo Acutis is
humanality.com.
Humanality.org.
Humanality.org. Okay.
Yeah. So Carlo Acutis has been following me for sure, and you know, he limited his technology to 1 hour a week.
Saint Carlo Acutis. Yeah.
Saint Carlo Acutis. Yeah. So we can get into him in a little.
1 hour a week.
Yeah, 1 to 2 hours a week. That's
so he
like
used
less
it,
than 50 minutes a day.
That's,
yeah, he
tough,
used
man.
A website, and he gamed. Again, his games in 2004 were very different than 2025, you know?
I talked to his mom in an interview.
It's amazing.
Blew my mind. But she was sharing how like he cut himself off with his games. He had an extraordinary amount of discipline.
Right. Oh, insane.
Like he would allow himself like, you know, an hour a week full total.
For sure.
With games and time
for
it.
For sure.
It's like,
it's amazing.
Anyway, sorry, yeah.
No, but I love him. He's after me. And I think he gets what we're doing, but... So yeah, students join a village at a university. We offer light phones or wise phones. These are kind of minimalist phones.
Okay.
And students were willingly giving up their smartphones. It was like incredible. And each month, so we've compiled, you know, these 11 humanality ways or what I've created. So these are 11 ways to be more human. Things like be light, be connected, be moving, be outside, be present, be mindful. All these B's unpack problems that technology is creating and solutions. So what everyone's going to do essentially is create a digital plan of life. And this is super, super helpful. You define your device and then you choose a mode. Okay. So we have some fun modes you go in. So I don't know if you saw this at one point, but there's
it's almost
these,
gamifying.
Yeah.
I love that.
There's these guys that were like going in monk mode to get like really productive and would do like 6 hour spans without their phone. And I was like, that's kind of funny. Like, let's make some modes. So we have human mode, which is kind of a dumbified smartphone. So you can dumb that thing down to take off a lot of the addictive aspects and get it down to a tool.
Which is deleting apps, basically.
Pretty much. And reorganizing your screen and going grayscale. If you just go grayscale, it decreases your looks to your device by 43%. So even down to the color, it's keeping you engaged, right? And the blue light at
I'm
night
I'm grayscaling
is,
right now, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
I don't know how to...
No, I have this grayscale feature. I just brought it down.
Yes, the three things.
Right now, we're putting this into practice. There, grayscale. My
Boom.
Wife's beautiful face is still there, but black and white.
I love it.
There
Boom.
It is. Grayscale.
Grayscale. Okay. Your next mode is rebel mode.
Rebel
so
mode.
So if you want to be a rebel dude, go to a light phone. Like, go to a wise phone. Those are actually great options, but it's rebellious, you know?
We'll link below the video.
Yeah.
Free marketing for wise phone and light phone.
Techlist.com. Check it out. You can use humanality code. Right. And then the last mode is savage
or code
mode.
Chris on the wise phone. I just
nice.
I do. I
Dude,
have a code. You have a code.
More of these things we can get out the world, the better.
That's awesome.
And then savage mode is our last one. So that's actually pretty hilarious. And
savage
one,
mode.
One kid did do it. It
Wait,
was
light. I'm sorry, light phone too. Like I saw the Schneers kid. You're working with mm-hmm, Justin mm-hmm, Schneer on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid at college had a light phone. Okay, the wise phone's cool. It's like a dumbed down.
It's a dumbed down smartphone.
But
yeah.
the light phone looks like an entirely different thing.
For
it's
sure.
Like this little tiny square, and it
I love
but it.
It
does the job.
It's shocking. It shocks people. Yeah, the iPhone 3. I have the new iPhone 3. It's actually working really well.
I'm gonna.
It looks a little bit more boxy and funny, and it has a camera now, and you know, kind of funny. Yeah, I know. Hey, it's got a the directions actually work.
Wow.
It's got a flashlight. It's pretty wild.
Wow.
Savage mode is no cell phone, just your computer. We had two students do that and have an amazing college experience. Now we're not asking everyone to do Savage mode, but you could if you want.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So you're targeting college campuses.
Yeah, right now.
Getting them in community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they take on, these monthly challenges where they go on phone-free hikes and go on, have phone-free meals together and take on kind of these detox protocols to help them in their relationships, in their purity, in their concentration. I mean, we've had students share, their sleep's improving. Their, mental health is improving. Like, girls' self-esteem, literally healing. And there's a lot of data on this. 4-week detoxes can be actually incredibly powerful. So if you're listening to this and, most people, you're struggling with this as a family, and all your kids are addicted and you feel sad that you gave this to them. One, this isn't your fault as a parent. Mm. So parents shouldn't feel bad. The way forward is really going to be intentional and somewhat intense. And there's going to be a period of probably some anger and people freaking out.
Yeah.
But even after this 4-week span, there's a lot of healing neurologically that can happen.
Wow.
But some students are not wanting to go back to a smartphone. They like their life phones. And at the end of the year, some schools through end of year concerts, and you had to keep your phone at the door and just experience music without a screen. So essentially what we did there the last 2 years, we're like, okay, this is actually for the world, for everyone. This is teenagers, this is adults, this is grandparents. So in July, we're going to be able to, anyone can go to our website and launch a Humanality Village. You will create your digital plan of life. You'll meet together, go through the curriculum, multiple MDs, PhDs, psychologists, physicians in these episodes, unpacking all the science.
Wow.
And again, we're getting into health and wellness. Like, we're getting into sleep and nutrition and blue light and our lighting environments. I just find it funny, that, in scriptures and Genesis, God separated the light from the dark.
Mm.
And in our evenings, we are living daytime at nighttime.
Wow.
And our light pollution is radically affecting our physiology.
Wow.
So just even your light in the evenings, screens, we encourage blue light blockers. We literally have all these stickers that are the challenges. So one of the challenges is candles. So what are your challenges? One night is just live by candlelight and see what that's like. People are loving this. It's actually really fun to be human, come to find out, we have bonfire stickers. We have sauna stickers. We have all these, mindful meals, focus, fitness. So you just work out without any sound. I know that's crazy to work out without earbuds, but just try it. And it's a really fun experience,
And it takes community to actually, because
that's
it's so
our
hard.
Secret sauce.
That's like AA, like anything that's addictive.
It's 100%.
You have to have people with you in it.
That's 100% our secret sauce. So you join a village, and my hope is that families will meet together and do this. You go through the episode, you work through your journal, and you take on these challenges together as a village. And we're going to continue to expand at universities and high schools. And my hope, this is kind of the movement of the rebellion. This is. I think going to help millions of people.
I have two things coming to mind here, and I'm so excited about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Humanality.org.
Dude, I appreciate
having
the conversation.
Going to link below the video. Two things come to mind. One, you said parents don't feel bad. I would say, parents maybe do feel a little bit bad, right? Because if I'm aware that my kid is consuming something that's having all these negative effects,
that's right.
I'm not going to let my kid.
Yes.
But what if my kid fights me? Well, do I love my kid enough to get into a fight with my kid?
Yeah.
My children didn't have any social media through high school, and now reluctantly, they're kind of grossed out
by it. Didn't your son give it up or something?
My son had a smartphone,
right.
And then just chucked it.
That's
and he's
right.
like, Dad, get me maybe a watch.
I love that.
So you can call me on the watch. Mm-hmm. Actually, the watches are great because you can't be scrolling a lot
for
on
sure.
the watch.
There's
it's not,
some of them
not
that you can do, I think, too much, but they're better.
Yeah. And dude, the kid got into woodworking, plays three instruments. He just started
exactly what we're trying to help people do.
Yeah, it was amazing. But the detox is hard.
It's hard, but we help walk people through that. We give you all the resources in the village experience to do that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you're doing it together. But yeah, the ed tech world is sad because it's actually funded.
The what tech world?
Ed tech. So the idea that we need iPads in kindergarten classrooms.
Oh, you have to have it, yeah.
And all these schools now that have, all these computers and stuff, the data is showing a very opposite conclusion. Mm. So when parents are like, I'm afraid my kids are going to be behind, the data is actually showing the longer you delay screens in their life, all screens, the better they will have creativity, the better they will perform. There was a study by Dr. Paul Torrance called the Torrance Tolerance Test. They studied a whole group in Michigan over their whole span of lives and actually showed that their creativity was the best predictor of success in their life. Not IQ, not socioeconomic status, not area code. It was creativity. Sherry Turkle's talked about this. We are in a creativity crisis because of how much time we're putting into these technologies and not creating. So what's wild is the longer you can delay all of these technologies for your children, the better they're going to perform in real life. They're going to be able to problem solve better. They're going to have more social, emotional learning skills. Right now, empathy has decreased 40% the last 30 years amongst college students. That's not good. Empathy is learned in person. You can't learn it through TikTok.
I think it's plummeted during COVID, too. And
for sure. I mean, COVID exacerbated all these things, but it was already bad.
Because you're on your phones more.
Yeah, it was already bad. Yeah. But I would encourage parents, if you're listening to this and hearing some of the data, and maybe dive into the resources, start a Humanality Village. We're unpacking all the data. You can't unsee what you see once we share this. And then, yeah, you have to have some real loving, difficult conversations with your children.
And be okay with a fight.
And sadly, a ton of amazing Catholic families I know are struggling with this with their kids.
Oh, everybody is.
Yeah.
I mean, because we're struggling with it ourselves.
Totally.
You know, so there's the second thing that's really striking me. Like, I'm not in a college campus, but I do have a men's group I meet. And I'm going to bring this up. Like, what is our plan for life with media?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what am I going to do? And I got to be accountable. I got to be like, here's
yes.
here's my plan. Hold me to it.
Yes.
I don't even want to say this, but because it's shameful.
Yeah.
I'll show you, my brothers, my screen time report.
For sure.
Because some days I look in there, it's like,
I know.
7 hours I was looking at my devices
but
and
a lot of it's
my,
work.
My neck hurts.
What's tough is like some of it's work, some of it's communication.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said. I very rarely text now. And that's honestly changed my life. Like my life phone texting is so bad that when people text me, how are you? I just say, call me. I can't communicate.
Yeah.
I can't communicate. So one actually really helpful thing just with our devices is start to create some real boundaries and take some time off. And when I share this, people always laugh. They're like, oh, you're working with Halo. It's an app. I like Halo. Halo to me is a good technology that we're using. So we have a Humanality Detox on the Halo app, which walks you through a 30-day detox. But to your point, the accountability is huge. And so that's within the village experiment and experience. You have a neighbor, we call them. So instead of an accountability partner, we call them a neighbor. That's someone you walk with more intentionally through the detox process. But it's a great point. It's the reason why I think things like Exodus 90 work.
Yeah,
I think it's the reason
why
AA works.
Yep.
But it's affecting everything. Neil Postman said, a new technology doesn't just change this or that. It changes everything. So in honestly, what Humanality is doing, I'm kind of trying to unpack everything.
It's amazing. Yeah. You're also renewing my commitment to the way we do ministry. Like I've intentionally sacrificed explosive growth or views because I won't be the guy harvesting the last bad news and be like, you did what?
Right.
And then Chris's face on the screen. It's like, I just want to say things that inspire and help people live a better life.
Totally.
And that's just not going to get as many views. And I just have to be okay with that.
No, dude, in your latest book, honestly, was amazing. And a lot of this is happiness literature. Like Dr. Arthur Brooks is one of my heroes.
Living
right now.
Joy at reallifecatholic.com. There it is. Sorry, there was
a
plug.
That was a great plug.
Thank you.
Dr. Arthur Brooks is like one of my heroes, you know, in this space.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Really, unpacking the happiness literature, but it's kind of funny how all these guys bring up this topic, the tech, the phone, like put the phone down and just, you know.
Yeah.
That's hard for most of us. So we're really unpacking how to, and here's actually science behind why, and here's honestly why you really shouldn't be giving them your attention. Mm. You know, we really shouldn't be giving these platforms their
100%,
our time.
Man. Yeah.
They're evil. Actually, in 2018, Google took out of their motto, don't be evil. They took that out of their company.
Yeah, we're not doing that, so we got to be right. Sorry.
So it's
sorry, Google people. They're going to remove this video from YouTube. We love you. We're grateful for YouTube. I am grateful for to have the platform. Anyway,
for sure.
But you got to...
Just don't be evil. Just put it back in there.
Yeah, put it back in.
It's not that hard.
And then do it.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful for what you're doing, man. I'm grateful for how you're calling out big tech.
Yeah.
Even though this this particular interview will probably be pulled, and we won't be able to sell ads on it.
Totally.
But I don't care.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful for what you're doing.
I appreciate it.
And hopefully it exposing this stuff raises the bar for how we treat and care about, like, the common good actually should guide how we manage ourselves.
Yeah, and I want people to be happy. I want people to live an incredible life.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be lived on a screen. And even if, like, here we're going to meet people in this conversation through this internet disembodied world, but if that empowers you to get off of this and to start doing real things and build a company, start a family, so many marriages are falling apart that I hear of, you know, scrolling together in bed. At restaurants, I see these couples together just literally scrolling, not talking to one another. Like, I want to reclaim some of our humanity, and it's uncomfortable, and I don't like being this guy that has to do this, you know, but I know the freedom on the other side, and I know it's transformed my life, and I know what addiction to this stuff feels like.
Yeah.
So I'm not, there's no judgment. We're all in this together, but I want to help people be human.
And if there's a beauty with Carlo Acutis is, he's self-moderated, right? He's this use of media. But the way he used it for ministry and to reach people,
yes,
like I would say his goal in using media was to get people off media.
That's exactly what he said.
And using that to get people back to life, and you're doing the same thing. So
yeah,
and this I feel personally challenged and edified.
Yeah,
I liked having you here. I'm a little bothered by your presence now. If you could please escort him off the set.
Hey, also
no,
people
that's
should
a good
check
challenge
out
for me.
People should check out the Carlo Acutis documentary that Jimmy Wahlberg produced. It's out. I got to see it. It was incredible. So everyone should go watch that.
I was in it. I have not seen it yet.
Dude, you're in it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. But people were telling me, like, I have to see it.
Dude, you should watch it.
I really should.
It's really good.
Okay, I'm watching it today.
Great.
I'm watching it today.
You can use technology today and watch the documentary.
we'll link below the video for that, too.
Yeah, right.
Phenomenal
stuff. Link it all.
Hey, I love you, man. I can't wait to visit you in Wyoming and just share some real life, not looking at a screen with you.
It's great.
Thanks so much.
We'll go hunting and do some human stuff.
Thanks for what you're doing. Seriously.
Thanks, bro.
God bless you guys. I love you. Now get off the screen. Go live life. God bless you. Cut. Go to life. Get out of here. Stop. Stop watching. What are you doing? Why are you still watching me?
Guys, don't scroll.
Stop watching. Don't scroll to the next thing. Father Schmitz will come up next. I know he's good looking. Just get off. You've had enough. This hour has been enough. God bless you. Enjoy your day.